A big vote is coming up for Miami, and soon we're going to talk with one of the candidates. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The District 5 seat in Miami-Dade County has not been open for many years. Voters are going to choose between newcomer Eileen Higgins and Zoraida Barrero, wife of current County Commissioner Bruno Barrero. Today, we talk with Higgins about why she's running and her major platforms. Plus, this weekend is Key West Pride, the annual LGBTQ event. We're going to talk with a longtime resident of Key West about the region's inclusiveness and more about the festivities. And how good are you at spelling? Do you think you could beat this sixth grader?
Dragerman. Dragerman.
We meet a local teen who finished in the top 10 in the Scripps National Spelling Bee. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, the Miami-Dade County District 5 seat is up for grabs in a special election within less than 2 weeks. The current commissioner, Bruno Barrero, left the seat vacant in order to run in the congressional race to replace Ileana Ross Leighton. The two candidates vying for this commission post are newcomer Eileen Higgins and Zoraida Barrero, wife of Bruno Barrero. In the May election, Higgins took 35% of the vote, with Barrero at a close 33%. Now, again, the election is June 19th, and we've invited Zoraida Barrero for a separate conversation prior to the special election. We're joined now by Eileen Higgins. Eileen Higgins, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, let's go back to that late May election. You were the only non-Latino candidate, the only progressive in the race. You were the outsider in a way, because when you think about names that are known, with the competition that you had, honestly, did you think you'd finish tops the way you did?
No, I knew I had a path to the runoff because I had been working in the neighborhoods and the communities for the past 4 years. So I may not have been famous with name recognition, but I knew a lot of people with voter registration cards. And so I knew people would be willing to support me at the polls. But it was definitely a surprise that a message of a different sort of governance, a new set of ideas, a fresh set of ideas, and maybe a little more practical, down-to-earth candidate was resonating with more people than we ever expected. So it was a big, surprising, shocking evening to come out on top. It was a real honor that so many people chose me.
What was the strategy? So what was your strategy in the running up to that election and what you're doing now?
So the strategy was pretty simple. You know, the reason I'm running is very clear. I live in District 5, and I lived in it when I first moved to Miami. Then I got transferred away, and I came back. And I saw that the quality of life had not gone up. It had gone down. So that spurred me to begin to get involved more in the community several years ago about how can we resolve some of the problems we face both all around the county. And so I just communicated that we have some issues that need to be resolved more quickly and more practically, and that I was willing to do that, and that I was completely unencumbered with special interests. I mean, that's really what makes me different, is that I have no hidden agenda. I can literally look at the information, look at some of the issues we're having, see, you know, where we can find funding in the budget or just change operations to make, for example, transit work. Some of the transit stuff requires money. Others just require some more practical planning and implementation. And so that's what worked. It was practical solutions, unencumbered by the special interests of the past.
Are you doing anything different or unique in these last couple of weeks? Because, again, it was a very close race.
It was a very close race. What I am doing differently is doing things like this. I'm speaking with the media more. I'm trying to get my message out to more and more people. We are continuing to knock on doors. We are, you know, we know where voters live everywhere in the district, and we are knocking on doors 7 days a week. And every night, I'm sure people might be a little little tired of us calling them. We are calling them to remind them that they can vote. So it is very grassroots. Almost everybody on the campaign is a volunteer. That hasn't changed from day one. You know, we even designed our logo ourselves, did our own photography ourselves, built our own website. This is really, you know, for our neighborhoods. And that's what we're doing, is just telling people they have a different option from what they had in the past.
And you have, as you said, talking to the media, a lot of that media is Spanish media. This is a very Hispanic district.
Yes, it's over 60% Hispanic. But as you can tell from my sort of first place finish, there was no issues with achieving or gaining the support of lots of Hispanic voters. The majority of the people who did vote for me were Hispanic. In fact, I think if we look at the numbers, it'd be about 70% of those voters were Hispanic. So we all share the same problems, right? The things that we need to fix in our community, the high cost of housing, the fact that we have these low-wage jobs everywhere that never seem to increase our salaries, the fact that traffic's at a standstill, transit is completely unreliable. It doesn't have a culture. It doesn't have a language. It doesn't have a neighborhood, by the way. They're literally pervasive issues. And people are ready to stop talking about these things and having a commissioner that's a little more guided towards action. I guess I'm an engineer by training, so I'm a little more practical in my problem solving probably than some others might be.
You hit on your major platforms. Let's talk about some of the big issues.
Sure.
Let's talk about a couple of things too, by the way, that are coming up that hit on these issues. One of them, we talk about transit, we talk about transportation in the county. The commission is going to be voting soon on this extension of the 836 freeway. I don't believe it's in any of your district.
No,
it's
this
is a huge topic, hotly debated. So how do you feel about this?
So for me, you know, anybody that's lived in Miami has seen that all of the construction of our new freeways hasn't resulted in any shorter commutes or any less of a traffic quagmire. So the solution to traffic is not transit. And to extend the urban development boundary, which is our protection, right, against sea level rise and hurricanes. Let's remember what happened in Houston when they began to pave over their wetlands. So for me, I think the UDB needs to stay where it is. And the idea that we would spend $600 million on a road rather than on transit in some of our most vulnerable lands to climate change, again, that just is money that I'm not positive we're spending it in the right direction. And wouldn't those people of Kendall in that same time period rather have some transit solutions that could last forever? So for me, I'm not sure I'll be available on the commission to vote. I think they're doing that sooner rather than later. But I just think the solution to our traffic problems, yeah, we need smart slicks, smart signals, yada, yada, yada. But we also need transit, and we've been putting that off forever, and we can't.
So let's talk about this, again, one of your major platforms, talking about transit. And look, there's a smart plan. But, you know, we have heard the mayor kind of bounce back and forth on what that smart plan should be, more rail, less rail, more buses. So, okay, realistically, this is something that's going to take years, decades to resolve. But how do you start it? What do you want to see begin?
So there's a number of things. The smart plan is being studied, right? We have to wait. I think it's till January, maybe February. We're hoping the final report gets back with the recommendations on what technological solution makes sense for each of those lines in the smart plan. But that doesn't mean we have to wait for everything. So, for example, there are large sections of the county that do not have those small circulators. Many of the cities have put in the nice free trolleys that are sort of shorter routes, more efficient, less likely to get, you know, stuck in a quagmire. We need to be looking at that. So that can help sometimes with the last mile issue in other parts of the county. We also need to be looking at things we can do in advance of that. Some of the smart plan is obvious, right? We're obviously going to use rail up to Aventura. The tracks are there. They don't cost anything to build. And so continuing to secure the rights, I think we now through the city have the rights to 79th Street, but we haven't finished doing that all the way up to Aventura, and making sure that all the municipalities between here and there are able to fund their platforms so that we can accelerate that. Of course, getting across the bay, We have a couple. The Bay Link on the skinny, the MacArthur is kind of skinny, but on some of the others like Julia Tuttle, there's plenty of space for dedicated bus lanes, and that may happen sooner rather than later. So some of these things don't have to wait for that study.
You rely heavily
on
public transit.
Yes,
that's pretty much how you get around.
Yeah, I'm like 8 out of 10 trips on transit.
So where do you see the biggest problem? You mentioned a couple of things, but where do you see some of the biggest challenges as a rider yourself?
So I think as a rider, I mean, it's really interesting being a rider versus sitting in a conference room, I guess, planning public transportation. We have low ridership in part because we've been cutting buses, but we also have it in part because the service is so unreliable. And I can give you examples of things that can be fixed in 5 minutes. The Metro Mover closes at 10 p.m. so that construction projects can continue. Well, why is that? Like, why are we, the residents, not able to get home from work, but doesn't close at 10 p.m.? The other night I'm up there at the Omni stop, it's 9:40 p.m. The announcer says, we're closing at 10 p.m. Guess what? The people are downstairs locking me and another gentleman on the platform at 9:40. So what does 10 p.m. mean? Well, I know what 10 p.m. means. I think you probably know what 10 p.m. means, but it means something different to Miami-Dade Transit. And so these are the kinds of things that drive people away from transit. The buses that don't come, the buses that don't stop on time. And for example, a lot of the more touristed routes, literally, why can't, I actually lost my smart card the other night, so hopefully someone is using my $15 on transit. But I can't replace it unless I go to a Metro Rail station. But I want to ride the bus. I can't buy a smart card at CVS. I can't buy a smart card at Publix. I can't buy a smart card in a hotel if I'm a tourist. So now I'm a tourist. I'm paying with dollars and pennies. It takes forever to load the bus when people are paying in cash. So those are solutions other cities have looked at. They're not super expensive, right? These are things that are about efficiency. Some of the routes don't make sense. They're so long. You know, if there's an accident in Aventura, you can't get to work from Government Center.
We talk about, with transportation, I mean, how much of this is going to be on the county? How much of this is on the city?
So the bus system is absolutely on the county. Metro Rail is absolutely on the county, and the Mover is on the county. The trolleys are, of course, for the most part, the responsibility of the cities. We need, and I believe many of the commissioners are excited about expanding trolleys through the county to other parts of the county that don't have them.
And you know, when you talk to people, they always say rail. What about rail?
So
is it more buses or is it more rail?
It's both, right? It's both. When I lived here 10 years ago, I could take the bus and it was pretty bloody efficient because we didn't have our traffic problem, right? We didn't have so many people and such overdevelopment. So it's both. On some of the routes, it's going to be rail. On others, we may look at dedicated bus lines. I was fortunate enough to live in Mexico City. We had bus rapid transit. It's essentially an above ground subway. It was fantastic. It took hours off the commute on Insurgentes Boulevard. And so people have the buses need to improve their image, but we need to look at both.
We are talking with Eileen Higgins, one of the two candidates for the Miami-Dade Commission District 5 seat. That election is coming up June 19th. She is taking on Zoraida Barrero. She is the wife of the former Commissioner Bruno Barrero. Again, that election is coming up June 19th. Let's look at some of the other platforms. Another big issue here, of course, is, and one of the big ones you mentioned earlier, is affordable housing. We see a lot of cranes. We see a lot of construction. A lot is happening. A lot of people still moving to the area. But, of course, we've also seen this is one of the worst cities when it comes to affordability. And we see a lot of people spending up to 40, 45% of their income on housing. What can a commissioner, what can this county commission do in trying to help alleviate this problem?
So it's the county and the cities in conjunction, but there are things that other cities who are facing this sort of problem are doing, and we have not yet done many of them. So for example, inclusive zoning. 2016, I was part of a group that was trying to advocate for mandatory inclusive zoning. So you want to build an 80-story, beautiful, luxurious high-rise tower, that's fine. We need those, right? Those are great construction jobs. But in that, a small portion, who knows, 8 floors, 5 floors would be for workforce housing. So the commission decided not to vote for that. They've made it voluntary, so we can see how well that's worked. So We need to, if it continues as a voluntary system, it means the incentives the county has put in place aren't good enough to be making this happen at a rapid enough rate for us. So we need to look at that and re-examine that again. Many other cities, 20% of every housing unit we see in the county is not a housing unit. It's a bank account. It's an empty unit that is not lived in, not used for vacation, and not rented. So it's not available. So when we say we're building housing, we're not always building housing. We're sometimes building a place for people to keep their money safe, for particularly if they come from countries where inflation is very high, right? You might do the same thing. I might do the same thing. But they're not letting people rent those apartments. And so cities like Seattle have the same issues, and they're looking at some vacancy taxes so that you can encourage people to actually make those units be available on the market. So there's things we can do. There's probably some rezoning, you know, smaller buildings. Maybe they can only build 6 structures. Maybe they can build 8. It becomes a little bit more of an incentive for people to build those units.
So part of it is, of course, what you do to try to push developers in that direction.
Correct.
The other part is wages. Wages are still relatively low. What can you do about that?
So there's a couple things with wages. First of all, the county does have the ability, particularly we saw this live and front and center this week when the mayor vetoed a living wage for future concessionaires on county property. And that wasn't a giant wage. It was 12-something an hour and of course, with health benefits. So there were not enough votes to override his veto. What that means is all future concessionaires on our land, this is our land, right? We're residents. You own it. I own it. The employees of people who are leasing our land to make money, right? These are private sector companies, will not have to pay a living wage. And so that we could change, because when people are making $8 an hour, guess what? They're in the lines for affordable housing. Guess what? They're sitting in the emergency room at Jackson Hospital. Guess what? They need food assistance for their families. Guess who pays for that? The residents of the county, right? We all do. And wouldn't we rather have our money being paid for services we need? So this is one of those cases where the county has some control. But I would like to see more constructive small business growth. I've been involved in small business growth here in Miami for several years and have been looking with a few others at what some other cities are doing to structurally encourage small businesses to become medium-sized businesses. So that would be another one of my goals, is to add that perspective on the commission.
One last thing I wanted to hit on is the other big issue down here is, of course, the issue of sea level rise, climate change and sea level rise. We see a lot of this on Miami Beach. This is part of your district. Folks that, you know, you have a city that is spending millions and millions of dollars for a pumping system, raising roads. This is something that many coastal cities are going to have to consider at some point. How do you tackle this issue? There is a resiliency officer, by the way.
Yes.
Many cities have them.
Yeah.
The folks here are talking about it and trying to do something about it. But do you think we're going in the right direction? There is pushback right now on a lot of these projects.
They're pushed back, in particular on some of the road raising projects and finding the right solution to that. They're having a lot of community meetings, as a matter of fact, on Miami Beach to kind of find the right solution that works for homeowners but still manages to do a little work on the roads. But when you look at the county, there are several things going on. Of course, the 100 Resilient Cities Plan will probably be released with a nice roadmap. That probably won't come till 2019. The Resiliency Office, thank God we finally have that. That took a giant number of us at a commission meeting demanding that they be put in the budget. If we, the people, had not demanded that, we would not have an Office of Resiliency. It was hundreds of people at the county. I was one of them saying, this is silly. We can't wait any longer. But we do have some people doing good work on resiliency. Water and Sewer, as they're upgrading things, they are keeping resiliency in mind. We're not doing enough. We don't have, there's $100 million in rainwater and wastewater runoff projects that the county already has planned, but they're unfunded in the budget. So that's low-hanging fruit. We don't have to study those. We know what those are. And so perhaps in this next budget cycle, if we can begin to fund a couple of those, but we're not moving fast enough. The cities are moving faster than the county, and the county has to catch up.
As I mentioned before, you are the only progressive in the race. This is a county commission seat. But there's a lot of talk about the blue wave that's going on nationally in this year's election and, of course, the impact of Trump in the race. On a county seat, what do you think about that?
Well, I'm happy to have the votes of everybody, and I'm very grateful for the progressives who are voting for me. And by the way, I'm very grateful for the conservatives who are voting for me. They have told me that, as I have told them, like, we are all stuck in traffic. Transit doesn't work for any of us. This is not a red or blue issue. These are just issues that we need to solve. And I have promised to do my best to think clearly and to serve without the complications of special interests. And that message is resonating with voters on all ends of the spectrum. And I'm grateful for that, because in my opinion, the word in our case in a county commission space might mean something different if you're running for president, but I'm not running for president. At the county level, progressive means progress. And in the time I've been here, from when I first moved here till now, we haven't always made progress, right? Wages are the same. Housing is outrageous. Traffic is horrible. Transit is that we haven't protected ourselves from sea level rise. So I'm pleased to have the word progress be sticking in the middle of the word progressive. And I'm proud to represent that.
Eileen Higgins, one of the two candidates running for the Miami-Dade County Commission District 5 seat. That election is coming up June 19th. Her competition is Zoraida Barrero, wife of the former commissioner there, Bruno Barrero. Now, we have extended an invitation to Mrs. Barrero, and there still is time. Again, that election is June 19th. Eileen Higgins, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
All right, still to come, this weekend is Key West Pride. We're going to talk with a Key West resident about just how inclusive the Keys are toward the LGBTQ community. That's coming up next on Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, the Florida Keys prides itself as a place of diversity and inclusion, a place where all people are created equal. Around the city, you can see bumper stickers with the city's motto, One Human Family. For decades, Key West has been a haven for those in the LGBTQ community, dating back to Tennessee Williams in the 1940s. But the community is not immune to hateful attacks. Last year, a North Carolina man was arrested for chasing a gay couple down in Key West on his scooter and yelling homophobic slurs. Now, starting as of Wednesday and through this weekend, the Keys are celebrating Key West Pride. Joining us now via Skype, we have Heather Carruthers, the Monroe County Commissioner. She's been at the Keys, a resident of the Keys, for almost two decades now and has participated in past Key West Pride events. Heather Carruthers, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So how do you describe Key West Pride to anyone who's never been there, never seen it, never participated?
Well, you know, it's a celebration of diversity, not just for LGBTQ people, but also for our allies and colleagues and, frankly, everybody in town. I mean, I was at the opening event last night and really everybody was there. We tend to support each other. You know, we live on a small island and we certainly all get along very well. You're right. Our community motto is One Human Family. And I would just point out that the story of a little less than one human family behavior that you just shared was perpetrated by not a Key Wester. So, you know, most of us here, we get along, and frankly, those differences don't make a difference in terms of how we deal with each other.
Last year, there was a huge event during Key West Pride. Remind us about that.
I think you're probably referring to the C2C rainbow flag, which was actually in 2003. Where Gilbert Baker, who created the original rainbow flag, came to Key West and sewed a version of that flag with a number of community participants, both LGBTQ and straight, that stretched from the Gulf of Mexico all the way to the Atlantic Ocean.
And you were part. You were there for that. You were part of that.
Yeah, that year I happened to be the one of the co-chairs of the Pride celebration. And we were in California at a conference and happened to run into Gilbert Baker and shared with him the idea that Greg McGrady, who's has since passed away but had a tremendous vision about doing that here, shared with Gilbert our idea about creating a flag that would literally go from sea to sea. And it happened to be the 25th anniversary of Gilbert's creating the initial flag, the very first one. So he was very eager to come and work with us to do that. And since then, since 2003, the flag has been cut into separate 100-foot sections and literally sent all over the world to Pride events. And we'll have a section of it this year, too.
And just remind folks of who Mr. Baker is.
Sure. Gilbert Baker was a San Francisco artist who created the original rainbow flag as a symbol for the gay community.
And there were, what, 3,000 people who had volunteered to help stretch out this flag? I've seen pictures of it. It is amazing that it's a mile long.
It was amazing. A little over a mile long. Yeah, there were 3,000 people who helped us unfurl that flag and walk it all the way down to, it started literally in the Gulf of Mexico, went all the way down to Wall Street, and we dipped the other end of it in the Atlantic Ocean.
So again, as I mentioned, and you just talked about it, you know, the Keys are considered one of these communities that, again, very open, very safe for the LGBTQ community. How did it come to be that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think Key West has always had a little bit of a rogue sensibility. You know, we were part of the North during the Civil War. We were a free territory during the Civil War. We have had a history of attracting artists. We also have a very strong military presence. You know, during the 70s, I think one of our first tourism products here was founded by a gay man, and Tennessee Williams used to come down here a lot. Leonard Bernstein, a lot of folks visited here, and I think that they just found something unique in Key West. I don't know if it's the air, I don't know if it's the water, but it's always been a community where people's creative juices can flow pretty freely. It's, for a small island, we're very culturally diverse and have a tremendous amount of talent. And certainly in the 70s, during the AIDS epidemic, I know that 70s and 80s, many gay men moved to Key West to enjoy their last days in paradise. All of that combined, I think, going back again to the Civil War when we were a free territory, sort of represents the gestalt of the Keys.
But as I mentioned, there was that incident last year. And as you said, it wasn't a Key West resident who did that. But does that happen regularly? Do you see that sort of behavior from outsiders and visitors?
No, not regularly at all. Not at all. It's a very unusual circumstance when it does happen. But, it does happen. And, we're obviously very upset about that. Our community tends to rally around victims in those kinds of circumstances. We have a very progressive police department our police chief is a gay man. So, we're very cognizant of those things. And, we do what we can to inform people before they come to Key West that we don't tolerate that kind of behavior. Apparently not everybody gets the message.
You're not from the Keys. You're from New York, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Western New York, and I moved here from New York City.
So what brought you down south?
Well, I started vacationing in Key West in 1988, I think. And, I loved to vacation here. I mean, it has all of the terrific attributes of a tropical Caribbean island, but you can drive here from the mainland, and they speak English because my Spanish and my French are not so great. And they take American dollars. So, that combined with the ability to feel free about being who you are, made Key West really attractive, first as a vacation spot. And, frankly, I was living in New York City. I loved my time there. I was working for the direct marketing division of Ogilvy & Mather, a major advertising company on IBM Business. It was very exciting, but also stressful. And I saw what my life would be like if I stayed there. I'd be, work until 8 o'clock at night and jamming myself onto the subway or working to find to grab a cab home. And, I just got to a point in my life that I wanted to live someplace where I could sleep with the windows open and, bike to work. And that's what I found here. And, my story is probably not that different from a lot of other people. You come on vacation and then decide to move here permanently. I found out that the place I was staying was for sale. And within 6 months, had uprooted myself, sold all my interests in New York City, and moved down here.
Are the Keys trying to become more like that? Instead of just attracting tourists, becoming a tourism destination, are they trying to attract more long-term residents, especially from the LGBTQ community?
Well, I don't know if we're doing anything intentional to do that. you know, certainly we do attract tourists for the LGBTQ community as well as for the straight community, obviously, because we're, you know, the perfect destination. I do think that we need to work on diversifying our economy, and, you know, that's something that we talk a lot about down here. You know, we obviously have some constraints to that, that diversity, but certainly I'm running into more and more people now who live here full time, but who work online, and, you know, whose bosses or companies are as far away as San Francisco or New York City. That's not that unusual. You know, and I encourage that, because, you know, if anybody has the chance to live in paradise, but work doing that kind of challenging work that they're used to in a major metropolitan area, you know, more power to them. And what better place to do it than here?
We're talking with Monroe County Commissioner and member of the LGBTQ community, Heather Carruthers. We're talking about this week's 2018 Key West Pride, and we'd love to hear from you. You could share with us what makes living in the Key such a great experience. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, WLRN Sundial. You moved to the Keys. You started a business.
Yes, my late partner and I purchased a 38-room guest house. It was called Pearls. It was called Rainbow House at the time, and we changed the name to Pearls. And I owned and operated that for a little over 13 years.
And what the Pearls, when you first started it, was specifically for lesbians, right?
It was a women only.
Women only?
Women.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. And okay. Then you had to change that.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, life changes, things change. You know, we experienced the economic downturn here like everybody else did. But I think more to the point, as our society in general becomes more tolerant and accepting. I don't even know if I like the word tolerant, because that, you know, you can tolerate and an itchy label in the back of your shirt. So I think more accepting is perhaps the correct word. But as our society as a whole becomes more accepting and more understanding that differences like gender identity or orientation are really inconsequential in terms of how we should be treating each other, I think we all feel more comfortable in plenty of other places. And certainly, you know, my family and I, we vacation wherever we feel comfortable vacationing. We don't always seek out, you know, same-sex or LGBTQ establishments. But having said that, I really appreciated the opportunity to provide that for people who live in places that are less accepting. And that was really the goal for many years. But it became less and less important over time. And I'm thinking that that's going to continue to happen.
Why did you want to go into politics?
Well, that's a good question. I first got involved primarily with a group called Fair Insurance Rates in Monroe. And we, after the storms of 04 and 05 down here in the Keys, we were hit, like many in Florida, with exorbitant and unsustainable increases in our windstorm insurance rates. And so we founded a grassroots organization called Fair Insurance Rates in Monroe, and we effectively challenged some increases from Citizens Property Insurance. But through that process, I became much more engaged with the power possibility of change, you know, through the government. And I was asked to run for a county commission seat in 2008, which I did. You know, I was on the debate team in high school. I was a class president, so it was not that unusual for me. My you know, dad was a leader. He was a teacher and also a, you know, long-term Navy guy. So, you know, being involved in that way was not completely out of my wheelhouse. But certainly it's been extremely rewarding, sometimes, you know, frustrating and difficult, but absolutely rewarding to be able to serve this community that I love in this way as an elected official.
So again, how would you describe this week's festivities? How would you describe them again to folks who haven't had the chance to ever experience it or see it? And how would you compare it to others, like maybe the one in New York?
Well, it's a lot different. It's a lot more low key than New York. It's very friendly. It's less labely, if that's a word. It's very joyful. You know, people are, well, you know, Key West is also known for Fantasy Fest and all kinds of things where people can really express themselves. And it's fun to do that here. It's a lot more human scale than New York. You know, New York is really, that's an intense experience up there. And it's much more approachable down here. And everyone is welcome. You don't have to be LGBTQ at all to participate. That's what we love about Key West and what we love about the Keys. And that's the kind of diversity that's intended to be represented by our One Human Family motto. And that's what the rainbow flag was intended to do as well. So, you know, we just invite everybody to come down, relax, enjoy the weather. We've got tons of pool parties. We've got a parade on Sunday. We've got some comedy every night. It's a great little way to get away and reconnect with friends and really get to feel comfortable with yourself and relax.
We've been talking with Monroe County Commissioner Heather Carruthers. She joined us via Skype talking about this week's 2018 Key West Pride events. Ms. Carruthers, thank you so much. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much, and I love WLRN.
All right, always great to hear that. And again, we want to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts. If you've participated in past Key West Pride events, let us know about your thoughts of the event. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, WLRN Sundial. We'd love to hear your stories. All right, still to come, we just had the Scripps National Spelling Bee. A South Florida student made it to the top 10 and then came and challenged us. We have more of that coming up on Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. So millions of children compete every year in the Scripps Spelling Bee, spending hundreds, if not more, hours learning the roots of words and breaking them down. For sixth grader Simone Kaplan at St. Bonaventure Catholic School in Davie, Florida, the opportunity was a dream come true. Now, she had previously competed in the Spelling Bee in 2017, and back then she tied for 189th place. This year, Florida Spelling Bee Wiz made it as one of the 16 finalists and competed on the live broadcast. She eventually tied for 10th out of 11 million who began the school year hoping to make it to the national championship. That's impressive. The National Spelling Bee's Twitter account called for this week's Bee Fashion Icon, called her that, and students from her school dressed up as bumblebees in yellow and black for the school Spelling Bee watch party. And I spoke with Simone Kaplan and her mom, Elena Kaplan.
Well, I was reading when I was about 18 months old, and I always loved to read. That progressed into a natural appreciation of spelling and words.
All right. So, and what was the first spelling bee you were in?
The spelling bee only came to my school when I was in second grade. I was in their classroom-level spelling bee, but I did not win.
Now, let's talk about this spelling bee, the national spelling bee, the big one. You made it to the final 16. You were one of the 16 best spellers in the country. What was it like when you were up there?
Well, they were announcing the people who got to the top 41, and I wasn't sure if I would make it there. And when they called my name, I thought it was a dream come true. I was so fortunate to get that far. But then, when I realized that I was in the top 16, that was more than I could have ever imagined.
And the year before, is it true, the year before, you got knocked out early, and you got upset about that, and you wanted another chance, right?
Yes.
What happened that year?
Well, I was in fifth grade, and it was my first time going to the Nationals. I didn't think that I would win my Broward County B.
And so,
on my second on-stage round, they gave me the word juridical, which is spelled J-U-R-I-D-I-C-A-L, but I used a T instead of a D. I was definitely nervous, and I was sad when I got out, and officially I was tied for 189th place.
Wow, so you went from 189th last year to the top 16 this year. That is incredible.
This year, I'm tied for 10th.
10th? Wow. By the way, what is juridical?
It means relating to laws or the office of a judge.
My goodness. I didn't know that. Now I know a new word. Elaine, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Take us to the spelling bee this year.
Yes.
And, you know, were you there? Was everybody in the family there with her?
Yes. Simone's resource teacher also came with us to Washington, D.C., along with her, my parents, my husband, Simone's little sister. She had a huge cheering section.
And so what's it like for you? You're sitting off there. She's on the stage. That's already nerve-wracking enough. What's it like for you? You're sitting there watching her.
Ooh. First of all, I can't spell any of these words, so I wouldn't know if she was right or if she was wrong.
I'm with you. I know.
And you hold your breath and you pray and you ask for the divine power to please help her to make the right decisions, to recall everything that she's learned. And you just wait for somebody to say that she's correct.
Go back to, she was in fifth grade. She goes into the spelling bee, but she's, again, she doesn't get as far.
Mm-hmm.
And she's ranked really high. But what happened after that was over? What was going on?
Well, I asked her, would you like to do this again? Because we're here. We've checked the box. You don't have to do it anymore. And she said, no, I want to try again. And I think as a family, we all realized that she had the capability and the capacity to do so much better. And so I said to her, in life, we all get knocked down. It's how you get back up again that matters.
So how did she start? Did she immediately start preparing for the next year?
The next day. And she has not taken a day off since. 365 days a year. Vacation, birthday, Saturdays, Sundays, trips to Orlando, every vacation we run, every single day for hours every day.
That is commitment. All right, Simone. Tell me about how you practice every day. How many words are you practicing? What's your method?
Well, some people think that I just sit at home and flip through dictionaries. I don't do that. I use online software. I go on the Merriam-Webster Unabridged Dictionary online, and I look for different language patterns, and I look at words that have been given at the bee in the past and are due to come up soon.
And do you practice with family or friends or just by yourself with the software?
A lot of the time I'm alone with the software, but my dad and my mom, they try to quiz me, but sometimes they can't pronounce the words.
That's true.
So this isn't, you know what, this isn't memorizing words. You're studying patterns.
Yes, sometimes you do need to memorize the words, but you can't remember the entire dictionary. That's not humanly possible. So you need to understand what certain languages do with certain sounds.
Take me through, Simone, when you're standing up there and they give you a word and you don't know it or you don't recognize it. What do you do?
Well, that happened a few times on stage this year. And some of them I didn't know at all. Some of them I just had my doubts. So what I did is I asked, may I please have all information? It's really convenient and quick, and it's easier than just asking for everything individually. Because you need multiple pieces. You can't solve a mystery with just one clue.
Is there, what's one word, for example, that you needed all information?
I asked for all information on the word Draegerman. Draegerman. That was one of the hardest words that I got in the semifinals because it's from German, but it doesn't follow the typical German patterns when it comes to the long A sound.
I'm talking with Simone Kaplan and her mother, Elena Kaplan. Simone is a sixth grader at St. Bonaventure Catholic School in Davie, Florida, previously competed at the Scripps National Spelling Bee and tied for 10th place, 10 best spellers in the entire country. She's sharing her story with us now on Sundial. One of the things I had to ask you about, too, is your outfits. You didn't have these outfits last year. This is something new, right? The bee outfits.
Well, last year, I had a specific pair of black and yellow bee shoes, and the press was all over that. They would watch me come up to the microphone. Dr. Billy would give me my word, and they'd zoom in on my shoes. They were taking lots of pictures of them. And when we came back and we decided that we wanted to do this again, Mom decided we needed to take this to the next level.
So the next level is you have these full outfits. You made these.
Well, a family friend of ours did.
Okay.
Yeah. So I bought all of the fabric, and she and I together, we designed them. We came up with multiple outfits for her to wear every single day of the week, and pairs of shoes to go with each outfit. And it is like her superhero costume. Gives her confidence.
Because this, you're wearing one right now, and it's just all these little beads. Is that, or that's pink or red, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All over. So how did you feel when you're wearing this? How did you feel?
It made me feel more confident, and I feel that it shows my enthusiasm for the bee. It's touched many areas of my life, including how I dress.
Are you still practicing? Are you going to do this again?
Yes, I am. I feel like if I can go that far this year, imagine what can happen if I go next year.
Yeah. Did you, by the way, did you both stay and watch the entire event? You saw it to the very end?
Yes, we did. And even after Simone got her word incorrect on stage, she kept on spelling everyone else's words while she was sitting in the audience. I'm very proud of her.
I would say things like, oh, porphyrin, huh, I think I've seen that before.
What was, do you remember what was the winning word? What was the final word?
Koinonia.
Koinonia.
Koinonia. It's spelled K-O-I-N-O-N-I-A, but I didn't know that.
She does now.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. You know what? I heard that there are certain words that people misuse that really aggravate you when they misuse certain words, right?
Yes. Sometimes, you know, this word is in the unabridged dictionary, but I don't think it should be because it's non-standard. It's the word, wait for it, irregardless. I-R-R-E-G-A-R-D-L-E-S-S. And we've all met somebody who uses that word a lot. As in, irregardless of my many complaints, Jen continues to play her bagpipes while I'm sleeping. Dr. Bailey gives funny sentences like those.
Do you, when you hear people use those words, do you ever go up to them to correct them?
Sometimes. I try to be polite about it.
I'm going to be careful not to use any of those words today. But you know what, Mom, going back to, you know, the practicing.
Yes.
I mean, it's on one level, you're excited and you're happy about this commitment. But, you know, how much time is she spending practicing? Is she enjoying her life and doing other things?
Well, I think that if you want your child to be good in any one area, you have to devote time to that one area. Michael Phelps wasn't good at soccer and spelling and baseball. Phelps is good at swimming. So you have to spend a large quantity of your time honing that one skill, and that's what she does. So she does spend hours daily doing it.
Has she already started practicing for next year?
Well, I told her to take a break for a couple of weeks or a month, read some books, watch movies, play video games. And so she opened a book, and as she's reading the book, she's writing down words that she should be studying for next year. This is her relaxation time.
Because I found some of those interesting words in the book.
Yes.
But remember that I make sure that even when I was studying actively, I made sure to take breaks and have fun. I did jigsaw puzzles. I participated in the Science Olympiad for the regional and state with my school.
All right. So getting ready for next year, you know, now that you know what it's like and you've been up there, you finished in the top 10, as you said, tied for 10th. Do you think you'll be as nervous? You'll be more ready?
I'll be a bit more ready, definitely.
Why do you like spelling so much?
Well, I feel like it's a natural talent of mine, but moreover, it shows how diverse the English language is and where the words come from. For example, if you use the word coffee and tea a lot, you're actually using words from Arabic in the case of coffee and Chinese in the case of tea. words don't just grow on trees.
You're making me think about words in a whole new way. I never thought about that. That is such a good point. You know what, Elena, I'll ask you. I mean, you kind of said it a second ago, is you find what you're good at.
Right.
And you really put all of your energy and effort. I mean, when did you know this was her bailiwick, her talent?
Bailiwick.
Oh, see, I get to use a word once in a while.
Yeah, we've spelled that word. You know, I think that Simone's always been great with words. She's been an early reader, and as soon as the opportunity came up at her school in second grade, I said, uh-huh, this is for my child. And I think if every parent has the opportunity to grab onto that opportunity early, if they see something that their child is interested in, they should run with it.
Fantastic. Well, first of all, congratulations on getting that far, because that is amazing.
Thank you.
And best of luck to you next year. When you win it, come back and tell us about it.
Yes.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Simone.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Elena, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Simone Kaplan and her mother, Elena Kaplan. Again, Simone finished tied for 10th place in the Scripps National Spelling Bee competition this past year. You know what? We have some fascinating photos on our Facebook, also on Twitter. She has these beautiful dresses that she wears that have bees on them. She also has a beautiful pair of shoes. You just have to check out the photos. Also, there's a great video on our Facebook page right now. The Sundial team, the entire Sundial team, competing with her in a spelling bee competition. I'm not even going to tell you who won. Doesn't matter. All right, that's the program for today. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, you can always find us on iTunes, WLRN Sundial. Have a wonderful Friday, a great weekend. We'll catch you again next week.